Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
Charles Darwin.
The Nerds is where it's at.
Welcome everybody back into Nerd Sesh. As always, I'm Carson Brever, and alongside me is Logan Camden, and you already know the drill. We're going to be talking about all the day's action, and for the second time, Logan, in a week, we are going to be talking about a Jamal Murray game winner. This one to send the Lakers home in five in an incredibly tight, intense game, which of course we've seen several times throughout this series. Jamal, though, man, in the biggest moment, steps up, becomes just the first player ever to make multiple game winners within one series. Just incredibly, unfathomably clutch stuff from him. What do you make of that performance?
Jamal's, this is what he does, man. I was just thinking about you, dude, and that shirt you got. This guy loves Jamal Murray the whole time, man.
Like, I don't know where it is. I should throw that thing on.
We should hang it up in the back, man. Like, you should hang it in the rafters. Jamal is insane. Yeah, dude, him dunking on LeBron was crazy, too. Like, Jamal just, he's one of the clutchest dudes I've ever seen, dude. That's not even like, he hits a big pull-up three in this one, man, and the dunk on LeBron is off a backdoor cut. Like, Jamal just turned it up, man. He got an easy layup. He flips that switch, and it wasn't a great game wire to wire for him, but once he got going, man, he couldn't miss. And this was the best game I think we've gotten from Jamal in this game, in this series. Excuse me, man. Just a different kind of level of engaged. And finally, Carson, we got to see the Nuggets, I feel like, click into gear a little bit tonight, man. And it wasn't perfect. Like, I don't think Jokic was perfect at all in this game, but everybody had their individual impact, man. Jamal was doing his thing creating by himself. Aaron Gordon was dominating on the glass. And Michael Porter Jr. was banging every single shot, dude. MPJ has been awesome in this series. And we finally, I don't know, we got to see them against their backs against the wall, too. And for one, this was just a heavyweight battle, like watching the Lakers and them go back and forth in the half court sets, too. What's so difficult about that, man, is it's not any in transition. You're giving each team the ability to set up every time and get their defense set. It's no easy buckets here late. It's all in the half court. Jamal's one of the clutchest players I've ever seen, man. In the big moments, in the big spots, this is a guy that you got to have. And I thought it was a great game for the team, man. Even KCP and his struggles, you know, and he's a little hurt in this one. He hits a big three here in the fourth quarter, man. But most importantly, dude, I thought down the stretch, I thought the Lakers' inability to rebound killed them a little bit. They get some clutch offensive boards, generate some other looks. Aaron Gordon grabs a couple on LeBron where they needed him. Jokic gets a switch where he draws AD out to contest a midi on KCP, and they get a crucial offensive board. It's a great team win, man. And this was a battle. I want to give a ton of credit to the Lakers, dude. Just in – they're saying it is like a joke in the chat, but it really is, man. Last year might have been the most competitive sweep I ever saw. This year might have been the most competitive five-game series, dude. To lose like that, got to be heartbreaking for the Lakers, man. Two Jamal Murray buzzer beaters, but it's not anything new, man. This is what Jamal Murray does, man. This is what his thing is.
It's such a special moment for him. Like, this is a moment in NBA history. And I don't know if that sounds melodramatic, but literally nobody has ever done this before. Do you understand the scale of hitting two game-winning shots? And especially to do it against the Lakers team with LeBron and AD. And it doesn't matter if you're favored. Like, when you are leading, pivotal comebacks as well in both those situations. It's just remarkable. Jokic Murray two-man game is as good as any offense that we've ever seen. And even though this was still so far from the best punch that Denver can throw, and this was still a really disappointing performance of them at halftime, and it was an uncharacteristically sloppy Jokic game, 7 turnovers in this one, and early, he was frustratingly passive, and the Lakers throwing a lot of doubles at him was just the right decision because he wasn't asserting himself as a scorer, and he was even out of sync with his teammates in certain spots, just like completely not on the same page. But what pulled through in this game was, first of all, the collective shot making, which they haven't had throughout this series. This was a brutal, brutal shooting series from Denver. They come into this one shooting 27% from deep. And from the start, that was different in this game. Jamal Murray comes out hot. Reggie Jackson hits a couple pull-up jumpers. MPJ is just consistently exceptional throughout this game and throughout this series. My goodness. But that was what they needed because the execution wasn't seamless. And then down the stretch, what do? They go to their two best players time and time again. Jamal Murray steps into that huge three off the Aaron Gordon offensive rebound. Jokic gets a brief little cross match against Rui, and he easily gives him a bucket in single coverage. You mentioned he gets the offensive board off a switch. And then when it comes down to it, like, Jamal is just one of the best mid-range shot makers and one of the best pull-up shooters in the game. And he had been off this series. And doing this when he had been so off, like, it's what was so incredible about game two as well. He was 4 of 18 deep into that game. And yet in the closing moments in that fourth quarter, he was exceptional. And again, the guy has no fear in these moments. You get him a decent look for mid-range out of pick and roll, and he is just going to rise up and nail it in a spot like this. It's just incredible. And there are multiple 80 switches in this game where he doesn't beat 80 off the bounce, right? But he just gets that step back, and the shot making is so, so remarkable. This is one of the clutchest teams that I've ever seen. We talked about the net rating in the clutch this regular season, plus 25, which is just disgusting. And by the way, I also want to give props to Nikola Jokic for one pretty key defensive possession. I thought that the Lakers' clutch offensive process was solid in that at least two of their last three possessions ended in LeBron aggressive physical downhill drives that got him a layup and got him to the line. Like, that's what you want to rely on in those spots. But there was one situation with just a couple minutes left where he hunted Jokic on a switch, and Jokic held up in single coverage, and LeBron ultimately didn't attack him downhill. He kicked out to Austin Reeves, and whoever was on Reeves on that wing, I forget, wasn't really sunk in, and it was just a very mesh shot in that stretch. So they just consistently dial in on both sides of the ball in these situations. And to do this when they're off, when they don't have their A game, to do it 4 times in 5 games, when they didn't have their A game once, like, I do think that's a testament to how good this Denver team is. And you may look at this and say, well, they didn't play that great of basketball. And that's true throughout this series. But the ability to come through in the clutch, to have your best players outplay the opposing teams, to have your supporting cast be so stellar when it matters most, that's what makes this team special. And that's ultimately the theme of this series.
Yeah, and it always felt like we're just waiting for it, man. We're waiting for the Nuggets to start leading the charge back, and they do. And even to close it at the end of the first half, I will say I thought the Lakers should have been up by way more in the first half, man. I thought they soundly outplayed Denver. And LeBron in this one, LeBron's complete control of the game was so awesome. Like, in year 21, to be able to dictate every single possession, it's remarkable. Like, he is getting these switches at will with KCP, with Jamal, and he is attacking all of them. I mean, I was really disappointed in the Lakers supporting cast in the first half, dude. That, man, I mean, Roy was clinging everything, dude. He had so many open looks at the rim where, if the Lakers shooting was just on, I mean, they should have been up at half by even more. The Lakers consistently came out better than Denver in this series. They're plus 38, I believe, was what the broadcast said, through first halves in this. And, you know, Denver comes out flat, 9 turnovers, but they shoot 4 of 16 from behind the arc. I was really disappointed with the surrounding shooting in LA because I thought they played a much better first half. And then, it was a little bit of a big momentum swing. I was disappointed with one after Anthony Davis gets bumped into the shoulder by MPJ, and that was really strange. I don't know if that's a if it's a nerve thing with his neck, and you know, because everything goes together. I'm not going to clown on AD. I don't know what that was. I've never really seen that one before.
Head, shoulders, knees, and toes. I think it's something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. You could feel the momentum switch a little bit. And the one thing I was disappointed with it was that Darvin Ham didn't call a timeout, man. You kind of feel the tide turning in the game. And then the Nuggets go on this big run. And there's no one stopping the bleeding. There's no timeout. There's no slowing this run down. And, yeah, the Nuggets outlast them too, dude. I mean, they were trading all the way down. The one guy that was just so consistent is MPJ, though, man. We briefly touch on it. But, bro, I know you've said something along the lines of, bro, he might be one of the greatest shooters I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He might be. Like, that dude is – I don't expect him to miss, man. When he rises and fires, I am shocked when it doesn't go in. And he is so just ready, dude, at any given moment. I think that's MPJ's best quality is anytime he touches a ball, if it's low at his shoestrings, if it's over here, if it's over there, man, he's ready to rise and fire. And he has one of the prettiest jumpers I've ever seen. And I can't overstate how crucial he was in this series with Jamal's inconsistency sometimes. Mm-hmm. MPJ was just a constant, man, that you could rely on. Really, really reliable. And I was really impressed, man, like you said, just with the collective Nuggets shot making. I thought that was the difference, man. Like, the Lakers have a bad shooting first half. Both of these teams generated a lot of high-quality shots. And LeBron controlled this game too, dude. I kind of feel bad a little bit for LeBron, dude. This was a super impressive game from him. Outside of him not grabbing those two rebounds at the end where I just thought a little extra effort, a little more paying attention, he played a damn near perfect game, dude, in elimination. This is just what we've come to know with him. But shooting, I really think, made the difference, man. The Lakers missed a lot of stuff early and didn't pad the lead when they could have, dude. They needed to stack when the Nuggets were slow. They got to clicking, and it was just too close, man.
Yeah, Denver's ultimately clearly the better team, and even if they don't have their A game, they're just good, or they're better by a wide enough margin to where they can still pull through. That was a hell of an offensive rebound by AG, man. I don't even know how hard you can be on LeBron. Like, he skied for that board. He was physical, and then he held on in traffic and obviously makes a great read kicking that out to Jamal Murray. This is a phenomenal series from MPJ. Like, it was just ridiculous what he did, and overall really was their second best player, because Jamal has two very clutch performances in games 2 and 5, and tonight he was just really excellent overall. But that hasn't been the case throughout the series. We talked about how brutal his efficiency was coming into this game. The most consistent source of offense, outside of obviously Nikola Jokic, this entire series, every first half when everybody else started slow, Michael Porter Jr. was this inevitable release valve, just this incredible pure shot maker. If it's in transition, if it's off the catch, and I don't even hesitate to say he's one of the best shooters ever. We've never seen a guy at this size off the catch who shoots off movement like this. And because of his size, like, regardless of contest, he's just absolute water. Like, this is ridiculous, bro. 23 points per game on 70% true shooting in this series with, of course, improved defense and improved decision-making. Like, when the margins were this slim, he was so, so special and deserves so much credit for what he's done for this team. Because this was, like, not a very good Jokic game. And in the first half, it was just bad Jokic. And throughout this series, it's ridiculous, dude. He puts up 28, 16, and 10 on 67% true shooting, and you feel like he could have played better. Like, if that isn't a testament to the fact that the guy is clearly the best player in the world, I don't know what could be. But, again, not assertive enough early. Just perfectly content to pass out of these doubles, and Jokic is never going to have a problem with just making the right play. But it's not passing out of the doubles that's an issue. It is just the acceptance of, okay, that's going to be my entire involvement in this play. Like, late in the first half, we saw, okay, he's passing out of a double, and then he's cutting, and then he's reposting Anthony Davis, and now he's in single coverage. Like, you have to do stuff like that. When you have a switch for even a moment, like, you have to put up the touch shot over a smaller defender, and early in this game, he just wasn't doing this. He has 3 full-court outlet passes where he just overthrows the guy, which is so uncharacteristic for him. So, like, turnovers, not being aggressive enough. He even misses a bunny over Austin Reeves late in this game, where he scores 90% of the time. AD holds up in single coverage on that one play, gets the block on the overturned call. And MPJ was really huge, not so much in the close of this game, but just, like, for them staying in this game, because there were also several offensive possessions throughout this game where things stagnated, and then it got to late in the shot clock. And I don't really like seeing Jokic Shambor shuffles from deep in those situations. Like, it just felt like they didn't have everything humming. It wasn't an easy, seamless game, and they still pulled through. Super impressive on that front. I agree with you on LeBron, dude. Like, the last couple games of this series, we just got such an impressive version of LeBron James. And it was the physicality, ultimately, down the stretch. Like, again, his shot making was really, really good in this game. And he has that one spot with the Jokic switch where he should get, or he should try to get downhill more. Like, Jokic was conceding some ground. He was going to give him that mid-range pull-up. LeBron's not going to take that shot. We know that. That's just not in his tendencies. But I really thought that he played a pretty excellent game in this one. And it's just not enough. AD absolutely made some really big plays still defensively down the stretch. I mentioned the one on Jokic. He had a big block on Jamal Murray, but offensively just did not look comfortable asserting himself anymore. And like, you have those couple minutes where they try to go small ball and then it's Jackson Hayes. And it's like, those lineups are just kind of untenable. Jokic should have been more aggressive in that stretch as well. But ultimately, LeBron did his job. The Lakers just aren't as good as the Denver Nuggets, but they came close. Like, this was the Lakers team that you would have hoped to see if you're a Lakers fan, where Austin Reeves is actually carrying his weight. And do I love him going right into Jokic's body and then going to a turnaround on like the second to last possession of the game? I don't love it. I prefer him just getting to those mid-range pull-ups, but he had been really good in this game as a shot maker and had made some big shots down the stretch. D'Angelo Russell was solid in this game. Rui Hachimura was solid in this game. Like, these guys who totally underwhelmed early in this series came through and at least pulled their weight. And it ends up being that another team is just better than you. And you have to live with that as a Lakers fan. Like, Denver is great. They are a reigning champion for a reason. They are, to me, still the title favorite for a reason. They didn't play their best in the series really at any point, but they didn't have to. They played very well when it mattered most.
Is Jamal Murray the biggest villain in Los Angeles? Like, I mean, he's got to be in the history books.
Oh, he's got to be in the history books, dude. Like, this is just devastating. When you think about what he did to them last series, like in the Western Conference Finals last year, when he was just an assassin the entire time, 32 a night on 65% true shooting, and then to deliver two game winners like this.
I mean,
you know how you could ever look the man in the eye.
He takes their heart twice in this one. It's just, like you said, man, it's not enough. And it always felt like Denver was just looming in all these games, man. And I'm so impressed with LeBron's game. And that's what I hate, man. Like, people that are going to, I don't know, use this for arguments or something. I'm blown away. I'm baffled. This was an amazing series from LeBron. The shot making, like, just pulling up top of the key when he needed it. He hits the FU3 in this one too, man, at a clutch spot. Like, but his mismatch attacking was genius. And just their process, man, even – there's this one possession in the first half, for example, where he tries deliberately to go for the switch. It doesn't happen. Jamal Murray is so concerned about him switching on to him that Dinwiddie backs cut Murray. He feeds Dinwiddie. Eventually, I think the Lakers end up, D'Lo misses the three on the backside or something. But just for a guy, and I know it's LeBron, man, but he controlled this game so masterfully, man. And I don't want to undersell that. Like, this has been a great series for him, man. And a really great series for Anthony Davis too. It's a shame that it ends like this. And it's a shame that it ends in five games, and that's going to be people's takeaway. I was so impressed with the Lakers star duo, man. Anthony Davis, even before he got hurt in this one, going at Nikola Jokic, and it's been all series, man. Like, this was a different Anthony Davis, a consistent Anthony Davis, a, might I say, man, like a hungry, like I saw a fire in Anthony Davis that I've wanted to see that maybe I haven't seen since, you know, the bubble, like a dog aspect. I want it. You know, I gotta go hard. And it's hard to get that out of Anthony Davis consistently. Every game in this series, we got, you know, really great AD, and we got really freaking good LeBron, if not perfect LeBron. And it's just not enough, man. The Nuggets are just better. Like, that is just the reality of the situation. I don't put really any of this on LeBron or Anthony Davis.
That's got to be the takeaway if you're a Lakers fan. That's got to be what you come away happy with. The fact that you have, to me, still two top 10 players. I mean, the offense of Anthony Davis that we got in this series was exceptional. The touch shot making, the aggression out of pick and roll and out of post-ups. Like, you see that stretch again in this game where that LeBron 80 pick and roll is just incredibly, incredibly difficult to stop. If you sit too deep in the drop, then AD is just going to kill you with his touch shot making. And if you allow him to get behind you, well, then he's just this still really high level target around the rim. Like, he gives you in this series 28, 16, and 4 on 67% true shooting. LeBron gives you 28, 7, and 9 on 64% true shooting. Last year, those two got dogged, like just flat out, right? AD was way too inconsistent offensively. LeBron, just with the foot, with his jumper being off, didn't play nearly at the level that he did this year. Meanwhile, Jamal was incredible, and Jokic, as he always is just inevitably by far the best player on the floor. But they really did change that dynamic this year, where they were playing at the level much closer to Jokic and Murray in the aggregate, if not equaling them, just because of how off Jamal was for so much of this series. And that's why I don't think that you can like enter panic mode if you're the Lakers. And I know that a bunch of people will. The standard couldn't possibly be that you were going to beat Denver, man. And I get it if you're kicking yourself over missed opportunities and whatnot, but like, ultimately, you got a subpar version of Denver and you still lost in five. And that's with your two superstars playing at a great level. But I wouldn't be like, oh, it's so over. Winning titles just can't be the standard every single year. LeBron is 39. You made a trade for Russell Westbrook that set your franchise back years. You traded away great role players for a guy who was an awful fit, and you've been trying to recover from that. And there's going to be so much scapegoating and freakouts and blaming. Everybody will be blamed. D'Angelo Russell, deservedly so for early in this series, but last couple games, he was solid. Darvin Ham, of course, is going to be put through the ringer. And I don't think Darvin Ham is a good basketball coach. I also think that people overstate his culpability, acting like every missed shot is a product of a Darvin Ham decision. Like, he's just a more significant factor in the shortcomings of this team, when ultimately they don't have as many great basketball players as Denver does, and they don't have the best player on the floor as Denver does. So you take that into next year. You have LeBron and AD. I think it's about addressing point of attack defense. I think it's about moving off of D'Angelo Russell, simply because he and Austin Reeves have two similar of skill sets, and you need to improve in terms of point of attack defense, even though they did a better job than I would have expected on Jamal in this series. Props to Reeves for that. But like, ultimately, you need somebody who can be a guy in those settings. Vando, of course, is hurt, but I think having somebody who would be able to also give you legit offensive contributions would be pretty essential. And then I don't think you're that far away. But what are you going to do where you're like the title favorite? That's not going to happen, right? Like, the Nuggets are phenomenal. The Timberwolves are phenomenal. The Thunder are phenomenal and ascending. I think Lakers fans would be much better off accepting we are a good playoff team. People can say whatever they want. The Lakers are a good playoff team. They finished in the play-in because of lackadaisical effort and bad lineup stuff and all that throughout the regular season. The level that they played at was impressive in this series overall. Like, they are a good playoff team, and that's not a disastrous place to be as a franchise when you still have 39-year-old LeBron James, who I don't think is going to leave. I don't think he's going to go to another situation. Like, it's so impressive that he is still playing at this level, that he can still drive a team, along with Anthony Davis, to be this good when the roster around them is still flawed. And so that's just sort of the perspective that I would have. They're not going to win the title, but they're going to be legitimately good as long as LeBron is still playing at this level. And I also don't view it as like a massive organizational failure in terms of roster building this year. Legitimately, the thing that set them back was the Rush trade, right? You can't give up a KCP and you can't give up a Kuz. You can't let an Alex Caruso walk. But that happened years ago now. And so you operate within that reality. And this was not a bad series for the Lakers.
Not at all. I think there's a lot of positives to take away. The biggest thing is that LeBron and AD were able to reach this level. That's the most important thing, like in all of this. And the beauty of it is I think the Lakers can actually retool enough and get better. And that's the goal, right, Carson? The Lakers screwed themselves a long time ago with that Russ deal. That's old news, man. All we can do is move on and move forward. And so the only thing left to do is to get better for next year. And I think that's an easy sell. Like, you do move off of D'Lo. Actually, the one thing I wanted to add on the Darvin Ham point, I don't really put a whole lot on Darvin for this game other than him not calling that timeout in the third quarter to stop that run. I will put the regular season results on Darvin.
Totally.
With lineups and
yes, just
bad decision making. And, you know, they blamed it all on injuries and stuff. I put him playing Taurean Prince so much, not going to different looks. Like, I put that on Darvin Ham. So they're seeding.
100%.
But how this team legitimately performed in the playoffs isn't a letdown. The Nuggets are the title favorite right now, you know, consensus. Or, you know, they're top three, whatever. So they were supposed to beat L.A. And it's like, I am still of the belief that if you put L.A. against any other team out west, and I'm sorry for doing this thought exercise, if you don't like it, I would have probably taken L.A. to beat every other team except Denver out west in a playoff series.
Wow.
Maybe not Minnesota. I don't know. Minnesota's the one.
Is a level up.
Minnesota's
a level up from L.A.
But I think that would have been a competitive series. That being said, I do think this offseason, you move off D'Lo, that's number one, for a few reasons. One, I do think it's redundant with Austin Reeves to have two shot creators like this. I think I'd rather have somebody who's a little more athletically and defensively inclined, who's going to do a little bit more of the little things. Also, this is a second consecutive down series against the Nuggets for D'Angelo Russell, point blank. He's got the 0-for in this series. Last year, he puts up 6 points, two boards, under four assists a night on 32% from the field and 13% from deep.
Yeah.
This series, you know, he puts up I think around like 15-4-4, and he's sub 40% from the field and sub 37% from behind the arc. So he just hasn't pulled his weight. And moreover than that, the skill set and him underperforming, it's his mentality. I don't like D'Angelo Russell's, like, I don't know, man. Do you care, D'Lo? Do you got like a heart, man? I don't, when guys are struggling, it really pains me when his shot is falling, just how much of a negative basketball player he is. Like, you know, if Reeves' shot isn't falling, I see him hustle a little bit, man. Like,
yeah.
When D'Angelo
D'Lo doesn't get it, it's that simple. Well,
and what makes me mad is, and maybe this is a, I don't know, I think he's really hard to coach because I don't think D'Lo takes criticism really well. And then two, I think D'Lo puts his head down when his shot isn't falling. And I really hate that from a basketball player. Like, you can still impact the game with effort and engagement and activity. And he's one of those guys that, well, if his jumper's falling, he is going to be active and he's going to be a little up and his energy is going to be good. But when his shot stops falling, D'Lo goes into like effort mode. Like, I'm just upset, like petulant almost, like a child. And I don't like that. That is another reason outside of underperforming and skill set redundancy. I do not like D'Angelo Russell's mentality. Mm-hmm. I don't think he has a winning mentality. And that's another reason why I would get rid of him. I think there's a lot of retooling the Lakers should do. You move off D'Lo, and I think you get more shooting. And what I mean by that is, even if a guy's one-dimensional, give me a guy that can go out there with LeBron and AD and just consistently knock down a jumper. Just more versatile players that can give you different looks, man, where they have different skill sets. I think the other position to address is to get rid of Jackson Hayes and to actually get a good backup four or five, man. I know we anticipated and we're hoping that Christian Wood could have been that guy for the Lakers. Unfortunately, he wasn't.
Yeah.
You just need a guy for non-AD minutes. And for other lineups, maybe if you want to go jumbo size, go big, put LeBron at the three, AD at the four, another guy, you know, just versatility. But most importantly, for the non-AD minutes. Again, I think it's a really positive going into the offseason. I don't come away here. I'm not shocked. I'm not surprised at this outcome. And I'm not disappointed in the outcome in the Lakers. I didn't expect them to win. I take a lot of positives back from this, man. LeBron and AD played well, and I think they can get better. You're not in like cap hell or anything, right? Like, Phoenix is fucked. You can look at them and go, man, you know, they got three superstars instead of two. They're in cap hell. The Lakers, for the most part, have pretty movable contracts that shouldn't be that hard. And I feel like they're enticing pieces. So it's going to take a lot of retooling to get better, and it's going to take a lot of work. But if the Lakers commit to that and commit to getting better and going all in again on next year on LeBron and AD, which is, I think, is what you have to do, I think it can be a better season than last year, man.
Yeah. And I do want to be clear. Like, I'm not trying to exculpate the Lakers decision makers here, because first of all, the Russell Westbrook trade was terrible. And that is still a Pelinka move. Like, he bears responsibility for that until the end of time, because that was a team that was much closer to contention before that. And then ever since then, they have been trying to make up ground. I also think they should have made a move at the deadline this year. And maybe there wasn't a perfect fit. I wouldn't like have loved DeJounte Murray. I think he would have had to show significant commitment to the defensive end of the floor that we haven't seen from him in his time in Atlanta, that he's capable of because of what he did with San Antonio. But like, oftentimes as guys start thinking with the mentality, I'm the star offensively, like they just lose that part of their identity. And he can be a frustrating player offensively as well. He can take the offense out of rhythm. He's not always an efficient pull-up shooter. Like, I think Lakers fans would have a problem with a guy like that. Zach LaVine obviously ends up being hurt, but that was a guy who apparently LeBron wanted. That was a rumor all along. Like, I don't think it's a shot maker like that who really makes the difference in a series like this. I do think it's ultimately about having two guards who fill distinct roles, and maybe you could have gotten a guy like that at the deadline. There's only so many who are really valuable, and Alex Caruso is like literally the perfect archetype, and that's where it's just like, man, sorry, Lakers fans, sorry. But I do think that LeBron and AD are still capable of carrying a really substantial offensive load, and if you just put a good offensive supporting cast alongside them, the ceiling there is high. That was the formula down the stretch of this year. Both LeBron and AD delivered in that playoff series. In the first three games, the supporting cast just did not. In these last two, they did. And so you get a win and you get a really competitive game. Darvin Ham also, I don't want to give a cop out because I don't think he's a good coach. I wouldn't have a problem with them firing Darvin Ham. The thing is, I just think people look at certain spots in this series and I think about like what we saw in game two, where we saw Mike Malone go to the adjustment of putting Aaron Gordon on Anthony Davis out of pick and roll, with Nikola Jokic therefore able to play as the low man the whole time with KCP on LeBron. And I feel like a lot of people were like, well, Darvin Ham's just going to sit there. Like, that's just the general meme, right? Darvin Ham just sits there and he doesn't know what to do. And it's like, well, ultimately the counter in that situation is that LeBron bullies KCP in single coverage and he makes that an unplayable look, because like that was a good solve for the LeBron AD pick and roll. AG was doing a really good job on AD and he was sitting and drop, and they weren't able to exploit the fact that the Nuggets often had a guard as the low man when you have your two biggest defenders guarding the pick and roll. Like, that was a good adjustment. And generally, it's up to the players. And guess what? The Nuggets held up really well on switches against LeBron in that game. And specifically, KCP held up better physically than I could have expected. That's just one example. I don't think Darvin Ham is good. I don't think he really adds anything. I think he messed up the rotations a bunch this regular season. I think certainly you look to LeBron as like the cultural leader, and this team's effort sucked for 82 games for the most part, but he certainly didn't help. Like, I don't think he's good, and I would have no problem with them firing him. My point is just like, Lakers fans are going to go to every last scapegoat that they can rather than accept the result that they faced a team that was better. And that was the reality here.
Yeah, I don't think Darvin Ham enhances this team. And if I'm being honest, like, LeBron is all. LeBron is the de facto kind of head coach. He's the guy that everybody looks to. Like, I don't mean this to like undermine Darvin Ham, but everybody's like looking to LeBron on this team. And I don't think I say that Darvin Ham doesn't elevate the Lakers, and I don't think he's a good coach either. I also just don't think the personnel was built here to do anything. Again, I think you need a more athletic, impactful, versatile defensive guard alongside D'Lo or Reeves. Like, I think that was a huge glaring weakness. I like Hachimura. I'd rather have a guy who's, you know, a better defender, a better shooter, a better rebounder, guys who can fill more specific roles. Wow. And that's the reality with this Lakers supporting cast, is that, like you said, man, because of all the moves that we have gotten, the domino effect here, losing KCP, losing Kuzma, losing Caruso, like, you follow the trail of breadcrumbs and it's not that hard to find out why the Lakers are in the spot they are. I think firing Frank Vogel was a fundamental misstep, a guy that you won a title with who I like way more than Darvin Ham. You know, again, I don't think Vogel's a great head coach, but I think he's better than Darvin Ham. So I think a lot as I'm really indifferent if the Lakers want to move off of Darvin too. I mean, if they want to and they think they can find a better head coach, sure, by all means. I think the most important thing about LA is just, yeah, concretely filling this out and getting the best roster you can possibly around LeBron and AD, man. Defenders, rebounders, shooters, go compete, man. And for the Lakers to do real things in the playoffs next year, obviously a couple of things are going to have to go their way. Like, that's just borderline. And they're not going to be one of the top teams out West. I'm probably going to have OKC over them. I'm probably going to have Minnesota over them. I'm definitely going to have the Nuggets over them, but you only got LeBron and AD for a finite amount of time, man. So you got to make the most of it, and you got to capitalize on the time that you do have with two of the top 15 guys in the league.
I'm still calling them two of the top 10, dude. I guess Ann is climbing into that party. Maybe we'll have to reevaluate, but like, they played up to that level. The one thing I will say is, even if in the aggregate they like mostly played up to the level of the Nuggets star duo because of how off Jamal was. In fourth quarters in the closing stretches, they didn't, because Jamal elevated his game and ultimately AD, especially when you think about game two and in this one where it did seem like he was affected by the injury, but like he does kind of become a non-factor down the stretch offensively. That's where Denver won this series. And that's also where their stars were better. You can go ahead and fire Darvin Ham. I wouldn't have any resistance to that. I don't think he's good. Again, I just think people are going to act like he is the lone culprit here, or D'Angelo Russell is the lone culprit here. And I just don't think that's reflective of the situation. But as much as I can say the expectation can't be winning titles every year, I do understand the frustration of Lakers fans when your supporting cast didn't deliver early in this series. And because Denver didn't play their A game, like they're still better than you. That tells you a lot. But also there was an opportunity in that in a couple of these spots. And the Lakers didn't quite reach that level that they needed to. Although I thought the Nuggets were pretty exceptional down the stretches of games 2 and 5 and 1 when you theoretically did have those opportunities. But LeBron is 39 years old and he's playing at a level at 39 that we've never seen. Like Kareem, incredible longevity. Karl Malone, blech, but like, you know, he was still really good at 39. But like, there's nothing comparable to this dude. The stat that is most mind-blowing is that of all players to ever reach their 21st season, LeBron has more points than all of the other dudes combined. Do you remember what Dirk Nowitzki looked like at 40, Logan? Like, he scored 15 points in a meaningless game, and it might as well have been a national holiday. It was the most incredible thing I'd ever seen.
He was just moving like a senior citizen, man. Dirk could barely walk.
He was moving like a senior citizen. Kobe at 37, right? There was a celebration for him getting 15 a night super inefficiently. Like, LeBron is held to this standard, especially by those who dislike him, that is just completely absurd. Like, if you take away anything other than appreciating and respecting LeBron James from this series, for him to be able to consistently play at a superstar level, at a top 10 level, at 39 years old, that has never been done in the scope of NBA history. And so at this point, it's all gravy, dude. Like, there's no hurting his legacy. If this had been a sweep, that wouldn't have hurt his legacy. He is continuing to exceed expectations. And before anybody calls me a Bron Glazer or whatever, I think Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player ever. And you know what I would never do? And what I would be pissed if people legitimately did in a conversation? If they looked at me and tried to tell me that Michael Jordan's career was in any way defined by what he did in his 39-year-old season with the Washington Wizards. Like, first of all, he wasn't playing at nearly the level that LeBron is right now, but that's ultimately not the most important thing. Of course, that's not the defining stretch. What LeBron is doing right now is absolutely remarkable, and I just want to give him the utmost credit for that because he did his job throughout this series. He did.
That's such a dumb equivalence. The expectations are so drastically different, man. Yeah. MJ, let's go carry the Wizards to a championship. That's just off the table. The mere fact that some people think that LeBron and AD are capable of that is a testament to how good he still is. It's
exactly.
No one's ever been this good at this age, man. No. Like, that's why I don't,
well, LeBron didn't win a championship this year, so he can't be my GOAT. Who cares, man?
He dominated this basketball game. I have never seen a dude this old control a basketball game like this, man. Like, he's just on a different, level, man. I just appreciate him so much, bro. There's nothing else to take away from this for me other than to be astounded and to be thankful that this man is still playing basketball, man. I don't want LeBron to retire. And when he does, I want LeBron too. We need LeBron too, man.
Well, I have bad news. The cloning process went a little bit wayward there. He came out only 6'2 and not nearly as athletic, and he really struggled as a jump shooter this year. So that's the bad news. But the good news is, LeBron was so great down the stretch of this year post All-Star break. Like, the volume and the efficiency was absolutely absurd. And yeah, he controlled these games when he wanted to. Were there possessions that he didn't execute as perfectly as Nikola Jokic? Of course, because Nikola Jokic is operating on an entirely different level than LeBron right now. And frankly, I think he's operating on a different level than everybody else in the game, especially just on the offensive side of the ball. For the most part, he abused his physical advantages. He was on as a shot maker, and he generally made quite good decisions and play made very well. And he dissected the defense. So I just think LeBron criticism from this is lame and is obviously agenda fueled. Is there anything else you want to hit on this game, on what's next for the Lakers, on what this means for the Nuggets, who we know are about to run into a hell of a basketball team in the Minnesota Timberwolves, who were as dominant and impressive in game one as anybody? They were more dominant and impressive than anybody.
The only thing I'd be concerned with Denver is shooting variance, you know, how up and down their shots were in this series. But I'm really impressed at the level that MPJ has consistently been at. Like, I trust him. I'm a little concerned about Jamal Murray and KCP's ankle injuries. KCP in this one rolls his. Jamal, we know, has been dealing with one all series long. That's huge. I mean,
calf.
This is
calf for Jamal, but yeah.
Yeah, calf. They don't have a ton of depth here in Denver, so anytime you have to stretch into the bench, it's tough. You know, trusting Christian Brown and Peyton Watson with real impactful minutes. Shout out Peyton Watson in this one. Hits a big three at the start of the fourth quarter. You know, the great energy guys. They're great effort and energy guys, and they're versatile wings. You know, they're athletic. They're going to rebound. They're going to play defense, and sometimes they can shoot. But, I mean, they're just no replacement for a guy like Murray or KCP. I was impressed with Reggie Jackson in this one. Shout out, man. We get a little Reggie Jackson action, hitting some mid-range pull-ups, hitting some threes. He gave him some good minutes, but those are the things that I'd probably most concerned about is shooting variance against Minnesota, the ankle injuries, especially with the fact that it's going to be tough on this Denver defense going up against Anthony Edwards, man. The guy is an athletic KCP, and physical freak. Yeah, KCP's an elite perimeter defender, man, but you need him at full strength. You can't have him hobbling around on the court like he was out there today. And Anna's a guy who has got good change in pace. Now to that change in pace, man, when he lulls you to one side, he can just explode out of the other. And you need these guys at full health. It's going to be hard slowing him down, man. Those are my chief concerns hidden into this upcoming series is containing Ant, the ankle injuries to the two guards, and the shooting ceiling and kind of, honestly, and Jokic's passivity at some points in this series too, man. When Jokic wants to, it's like he gets whatever he wants, man. That's what's frustrating about some of these stretches. It's like, just take over. Go get what you get, Jok. Those are all of my big chief concerns heading into the matchup against Minnesota, though.
Absolutely need more aggressive Jokic, and you felt like this was the game, right? All right, come out on your home floor, decisively close them out, no more shenanigans, and it was quite the opposite. And again, they're throwing second defenders at him a bunch. That was the strategy, and that's a good strategy ultimately. We've talked about it. Jokic post-ups have been a good bit less efficient this year when you double, and ultimately when Denver's perimeter shooters had struggled as much as they had throughout this series, like, yeah, absolutely, I would rather force those guys to knock down a look. I would rather force Jokic to make a perfect cross-court pass, even though he probably will, but all those things going perfectly together as opposed to like him just barbecuing whoever in single coverage, that is probably the right decision. But he has to come out and, in my opinion, be more thoroughly dominant against Minnesota. I also think he has to be more up to the task as a rim protector than he was throughout this series. I thought that there were several games where his effort there just wasn't good enough. I thought this was a good defensive game from Jokic, particularly down the stretch, and I think that helped make a difference. But you need more consistent Jamal, there's no question, and you need healthy KCP. And that's scary because this Minnesota team just has everything going right, and they check off a lot of boxes, as we've talked about. They defend Denver better than anybody. They're playing at a level offensively right now that is outstanding. Ant is playing at that superstar level. They have so many quality basketball players, whereas your depth is lacking a bit, and you really, really need KCP to be able to take on that Anthony Edwards matchup and to be right in doing so. So I'm super excited to see that series. I'm still going to pick Denver, but with the KCP injury lingering and Jamal still having the calf thing, even though he's great in this one, I'm probably going to go Denver in seven, which I would not have expected before this all started. So really, really fun series overall. Dude, if you're a Lakers fan and your heart is broken, I get it. But I think this is an admirable showing. And again, it's the Lakers-centric view that frames everything as being, this is how the Lakers squandered it. This is how they missed out on the opportunity. No, the fact that they were this close is ultimately a positive, in my opinion. That's an impressive thing to do against the Denver Nuggets, even when they aren't playing their best. So that wraps up this series. Some really special moments. We are going to take a quick break, and then we will be back talking about the other two games today, right after some quick words from DraftKings. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code NERDS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code NERDS only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Last thing I want to say about that series, now that I thought about it, Aaron Gordon, 19 offensive rebounds, dude, throughout the series. Absolutely massive. Also, thinking about the Minnesota matchup, got to give a little prayers up to Chris Finch, dude. The torn patellar tendon, that's brutal. Let me tell you something. I've had some bad dances with patellas back in the day. I've dislocated my kneecaps 3 times. It's no fun at all. No fun at all. So prayers up to him, man. That was not a good moment in that game. And we'll see if he's able to be there on the sideline or if that affects things for Minnesota at all. Hopefully not. But we can talk about Denver and we can talk about Minnesota as the two teams that seem to be, in our eyes, the most dominant forces out west. The Oklahoma City Thunder, Logan, are the one seed. And they delivered a sweep out here, knocking off the Pelicans today. Grimy, tough game, more reminiscent of game one than games two and three, which were just blowouts. How impressed are you by this OKC team pulling this off?
I'm very impressed with this team. And the consistency that we just got out of Oklahoma City is what I like the most, man. They didn't ever let up. You know what I mean? Like, they never gave an inch back to this team when they took care of business. Like, and they made life hard on New Orleans, man. This is a veteran New Orleans team, man. They got a lot of guys who are experienced, and they came in here and they handled business, dude. B.I. shoots 2 of 14 in this game, 0 of 3 from behind the arc. Like, shout out Lou Dort and them, man. Herb Jones has a bad one in this one. Like, Oklahoma City is gritty, too. Like, they may not be, like, the most physically imposing, like, size and athletic-wise, but they're physical
dogs. Jalen Williams literally barked in this series, bro.
Yeah. Well, dude, that's dogs. That's their thing, man. I love it.
I know, but he did it mid-game.
Some people think it's gimmicky, man. I love it. I love the young OKC culture. And that's another big thing here, man, is that this young core is establishing a culture and a presence here in the league, man, early. Like, they are setting the tone for the future while being real competitors now. This is a real contender. Like, I'm glad that they didn't play with their food, man. They never let up. They made every possession hard. They made them work. And in these grimy environments, I really think Oklahoma City is specifically equipped to thrive with two guys like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Williams. I want to give a big shout out to Jalen Williams for what he does in this game and what he does in this series too, man. The moment could have been big, you know, too big for any of these guys. J-Dub was awesome. 21-7-5 on the series on 53% from the field, 39% from deep, 59% true shooting. And this one, just reliable, dude. When they went to him, he got into mid-range. He found his buckets. He just did, dude. Jalen Williams is so freaking good, man. It's absurd. 24-8-4. It looks like two SGAs out there, man. It's unfair when you got two players like that. And that's the thing, man. The Thunder can survive in these environments because they play so feisty defensively. And then when they set up in the half court, they got two guys that can just hunt buckets, five out, spread out, attacking one man. And these are isolation killers, man. Great change in pace, tough pull-up jump shooters. That's where it starts. And then down the rest of the lineup, shout out to Chet for what he did defensively and on the glass in this series. A tough battle with Valanciunas. He didn't back down. Like, there were times when Jonas was giving him bucks, like just easy stuff where Chet couldn't contest it. But Chet was up to the task, didn't ever back down, had nearly 3 blocks a game in this one. And the other guy, I was really impressed with Josh Giddey in this series, Carson. Like, I expected him to be a real liability. He hits a big transition three in this one where he walks up, sets his feet confidently, sprays it, and he shot the hell out of the ball all series long. 13 points, 5 boards, 3 assists on 47% from the field and 50% from deep. They're a team best, or excuse me, second team best, plus 62 in Josh Giddey minutes in this series. The best, Jalen Williams at plus 74. I thought Giddey was going to be a serious liability in this one where you could sag off and you could, you know, just leave him alone on an island. If he's going to shoot like this, you know, you got to go guard him. And I thought also getting to the rack, he had some tough finishes in this series. He had some good floaters and he played defense hard. Like he was active there. Like Josh checked a lot of boxes for me that I didn't expect him to fulfill. I thought he was going to be a real negative in this first series. And I'm just proud of Oklahoma City for coming here, not playing with their food and finish it off. They don't want to give you any doubt, man. They don't want to give you any doubt that they are not the best team in the Western Conference. And I don't think they are, but they played like it in this one, man. They did not ever play around with New Orleans. Props to this young group.
Absolutely props, dude. It's outstanding. Like, just so much an outlier when we look at historical precedents to be this great, this young, and then to seamlessly get through a playoff series like this. Of course, New Orleans is probably the second weakest team in the field looking at either conference, like because of the fact that they're down Zion. I think Miami without Jimmy is even weaker, but they just didn't have the offensive punch to compete in this series. But that OKC defense was absolutely exceptional, dude. And of course, they're brilliant on both sides of the ball. It was only them and Boston who were top five on both sides of the ball consistently throughout this year. But the defense was ultimately what they rode throughout this series. They're number one in terms of defensive rating in these playoffs. 93.9, Logan. Ridiculous. That's some 2004 stuff. Actually, the 2004 Pistons wish that they had a defensive rating of 93.9. That's ridiculous. And what is so particularly outstanding, we can talk about Chet being one of the best pure rim protectors in the league, and he is. His instincts and timing and IQ there are just exceptionally made so many great rim-saving plays. But the perimeter defense, to me, is only matched by what you have in Minnesota. It is just ridiculous. You have J-Dub harassing CJ. All of these guys, their effort around screens is ridiculous, and they're so quick, and their motors don't stop. And then it's like, when CJ gets off of that matchup, he draws Aaron Wiggins, can't get separation on him, pushes off, offensive foul. Like, it's just incredible. And Boston has the personnel to be alongside OKC in Minnesota. I don't think that they are just as consistently insane, though. Like, they aren't those sort of diabolical competitors, unfortunately, where it's like Minnesota, right? Ball pressure, picking dudes up full court, and they have the personnel. The just ridiculous, maniacal effort that we see from OKC, and they have the personnel. That's why I would give them the edge. And the star of the show is Lu Dort. Like, what he did to Brandon Ingram, dude, this is a conversation-starting sort of series for Brandon Ingram. 14 points per game on 43% true shooting, dude. That is exceptionally, exceptionally brutal. That makes a Julius Randle playoff series look pretty good, man. He just got dogged by Lu Dort every single game. And it was some of the best individual defense that I've seen over a playoff series. Like, every single possession, BI had zero airspace. Constantly, Lou was super physical with him without fouling. And so BI was like so uncomfortable. He didn't feel comfortable dribbling. Like, he wouldn't put the ball on the floor. He's turning his back to the basket in all these spots. And then he's getting tough jumper after tough jumper. And Lou is disrupting his catches. Like, he pokes a ball out in this one. It's just incredible. And then you have what SGA and J-Dub are doing and help. Like, forget just about Chet Holmgren. What those guys can do as off-ball defenders with their length and their instincts. Like, they both pick up a monster block helping on BI. J-Dub gets a huge strip. Like, it's just brutal. And then Kayson Wallace comes in the game and he's giving BI fits. Like, it doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. Jay Will, that being the other Jalen Williams, as some less sensitive people would call him, I call him Jay Will. Arkansas Jalen Williams was doing a good job as the low man. Like, BI is always going to get tough shots. That's just the nature of his game. He doesn't have that sort of quickness. He also doesn't take volume pull-up threes. He's going to take a lot of tough twos normally. But he did not get an easy shot in this series, dude. Like, this was brutal. And I think even though there was an outsized burden on CJ and BI to try to produce good offense in this series, when neither of them are going to be consistently great enough there to compensate for the lack of Zion, I don't know that anybody other than Minnesota could have made life harder on them than OKC. And that's how they win two rock fight games. Games two and three, it's sort of like everything is going for them. But games one and four, like, they grind that out on the back of great defense. And then ultimately having the best shot makers when it matters most. That's the advantage you have with SGA and Logan. J-Dub is one of those guys. Like, they already have three, to me, top 35 players And Josh Giddey was really good in games 3 and 4. He looked confident. He looked comfortable. He goes 8 of 14 from deep. That's game-changing right there. Then again, you get to tap into the value of his passing and what he does in transition. And he's also confidently attacking closeouts, getting to his floaters, like competing defensively. That was good Josh Giddey. And the luxury for this OKC team is the reason that even if you get Josh Giddey like they did in game one, that I'm not freaking out is I do believe that Dagnall will be willing to go to any combination of Kayson Wallace or Aaron Wiggins, who's so damn good, or Isaiah Joe even, to close these games or to play extended stretches. That's the flexibility this team has. They have dogs everywhere. They have skill everywhere. They have athletes everywhere, even against a shorthanded Pelicans team that had to get through the play-in. Like, this was impressive stuff from OKC.
Yeah, dude, the recipe's rock solid. You've got two elite half-court shot creators who can go get their buckets at will. You've got shooting surrounding them all over the court. You've got a floor spacing five who is 40% from behind the arc, can handle. On the defensive side of the ball, you've got one of the best perimeter defenders in basketball in Lu Dort, who's just a weapon, man. You can put him out there against any of the best offensive players in basketball, and I think Lu can disrupt what they do. Like, he's strong, stout, fast, and he don't quit. And on the backside, you have an elite rim protector in Chet Holmgren. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal recipe, man. And because of that effort category, dude, yeah, I don't care who they're going up against. Like, the Thunder are going to make every single game competitive. They're not going to let you off the hook. And yeah, they're going to linger, man. They're going to hang around. And this is a team, when you have two pull-up jump shooters this caliber, where they are just so good at getting tough buckets, that's not a team that I want lingering, because that's a team that legitimately scares me, that can steal games in big moments, man. The Thunder have an awesome, awesome playoff recipe already, man.
Pull-up shooters and athletes, dude. It's that downhill combination with being damn good mid-range shooters and, in J-Dub's case, consistently an elite three-point shooter and good playmakers. Like, I thought J-Dub made some really nice passes in this game.
Yeah, I just wanted to hit on one of the key stretches from J-Dub in the fourth quarter. You know, Oklahoma City goes on an 18-2 fourth quarter run in this one. And J-Dub has this nasty sequence. It's a pull-up three, man. It's a catch-and-shoot three. Just, like, these are huge shots, man. Yeah. In a closeout playoff game that was tight. You know, that was tight. And Oklahoma City just pulled away, man. So much clearly the better team. I am disappointed that we didn't get to see Zion Williamson. As a basketball fan, I feel a little shortchanged. Just that I want to see what kind of impact he can have on a playoff series, man, and how much he swings it. Like, I know what I think of Zion Williamson and his impact and how great of a basketball player he is, but I want to see it come to fruition on the playoff stage in a complete series and really see how he can wreck things. It would have been an interesting matchup, but that's the one thing that I'm holding out hope for New Orleans, man, is that we can get him healthy, get him right, get him back to 100% and be ready to go when it comes playoff time, man. I'm salivating thinking about it.
It would be incredible. I hope we get to see healthy Zion, because the play-in game was obviously remarkable. The one last thing I want to say about OKC is that when I think about how they project to whoever is coming out of that 4 or 5 series, if it's LA or if it's Dallas, I do think it'll be Dallas. I had Dallas winning that series in like my pre-playoff picks. I didn't think there was a big gap between that team, but my thought was basically Dallas is going to have the best player on the floor. They're going to have, as great as J-Dub is, like, clearly the better second star offensively as well. So just that sort of overwhelming shot creation from the backcourt is crazy. And then in the front court, they're bigger, they're more physical. And I do think that still matters in these playoff environments. But like, Dallas would have to show me something, man. And Luka would have to show me something over these next couple games for me to still feel that way. Because right now, like, I'm just thinking about the perimeter defense that those Dallas guards are about to face. They're going to be hounded all series, and they have that burden to create everything. And I do think that the supporting cast, like, I don't necessarily dislike Dallas's depth, but there's always the question of, like, are any of these guys going to play well in an individual game, right? You never know. Any of them could just go ice cold shooting because nobody's that consistent. Whereas with OKC, I get down to the Kayson Wallace's and the Aaron Wiggins, and I'm like, hell yeah, dude. Play those guys 28 minutes when they're going, or if Giddey's off. Like, I'm so confident in that. And also, it's just the consistency. OKC comes out, and I think this is underrated, and it's a big reason that they got the one seed. They play their asses off every single night. And also, by the way, it's not just the depth. they have a third player on the floor in Chet Holmgren, who is a level up, like multiple levels up from the third best guy in Dallas. So there's a consistency there. Whereas Dallas, they've started two games this series where they go down 30. Like, unless we start seeing superhuman Luka Doncic, this Luka not cutting it, bro. OKC would wax Dallas. They would beat them in four or five if you got this Luka Doncic. Like, he needs to take his level way up. And then maybe I could see being confident in Dallas. But right now, OKC is just the better basketball team, and it's super impressive. For New Orleans, Logan, where do they go from here?
It's a great question. I think you move off of one of CJ McCollum and Brandon Ingram. I think you shop them around, and I think you saw something. I don't want to take too much away from one individual basketball game, but the one play-in game that we did see from Zion Williamson, what lineup did they close with? It was Jose Alvarado. It was Larry Nance Jr. It was Herb Jones. It's Trey Murphy, and it was Zion Williamson. They closed with the guys that were playing the best around Zion, and it's interesting, man. It's like, I use the Suns not to crap on them, but I just think they're an interesting contrast. Like, you have three players who are fundamentally redundant. Zion Williamson is a guy who needs the ball in his hands, and so, or is at his best when the ball is in his hands. So the way to maximize his abilities, and I'm not saying you don't have any other shot creator. I think to alleviate pressure, you need a guy that can reliably create from the perimeter. So if you want CJ, if you want BI, hold on to one of them. You need that other release valve. But I want more guys who can knock down shots, who can just defend at a high level around Zion. And I think that's how you get the best version of him out of this. B.I. is not a super impactful defensive wing. He's struggles to create his own shot in terms of separation. Like, he's a tough shot maker, but he's not creating easy looks for himself. He's very similar to Chris Middleton, in my opinion, and he's way less consistent than Chris Middleton. I do want to cut B.I. a little slack. I know he was dealing with an injury down the stretch of the second half of this season. And
yeah, sustained in the torture chamber.
Yeah, that's just a tough draw, man. Yeah. I think you got to move off of one of them. I would probably move off of Valanciunas. I just think that we've seen enough. Yeah, there's just enough matchups where he's exposed. And honestly, I think clearing out the paint, you know, maybe getting a real floor, you know, space and five, or maybe leaning into Nance more, you're going to open up a lot of paints for Zion to just attack, and that's going to make him even more of a weapon. I just think Zion is such a superstar stud that you need to just get players that work and fit around him. And there's a lot of guys I already like here. I love Herb Jones. Clamps, baby. Clamps. Trey Murphy, an elite shooter of the basketball. And we've seen a little bit more of his creation on the ball. Getting downhill more, into the lane. He's a freak athlete, man. Great touch. So I'm getting to that mid-range. Do the little floaty stuff. Good defender, too. Long, right? Those guys work alongside him. You got Dyson Daniels, who is another defensive hound. His shot is coming along, but he can handle a little bit. He's a really good defender. And so there's a solid base here. And again, the beauty of this is I think McCollum and B.I. and Valanciunas all have good value to the right teams. You know what I mean? I think they're archetypes that can work in different situations. I think their value's probably gone down over the past year. It's not as high as it once was, but I think you can get back good value for both of these guys. So I'm kind of shopping all three of the other big stars around Zion, and I'm just seeing what I can get and if I can find pieces that work or future assets. I'm very fine with trotting out like Herb and Trey alongside Zion on a nightly basis, man. I really like that configuration. Yeah. But I'm shopping all of those guys.
I'm not sure Jonas Valanciunas is even a quote-unquote star anywhere, perhaps of outside his specific hometown in Lithuania. I think even in greater Lithuania, he's getting overshadowed by Domas.
I overheard one dude watching him play basketball, and he said like seven times back-to-back-to-back as if someone didn't hear him. Man, that guy looks like Travis Kelce. He just kept saying it over and over again.
God, that sounds sick. Yeah, Valanciunas is obviously going to be gone, and his contract's up. I just think if you could get an athletic, switchable big, doesn't have to be super skilled, like literally just Larry Nance, but 2 inches taller, dude. I don't think that's a super high bar. Like, Larry Nance is very solid, but even being a capable floor spacer, being a solid vertical athlete, being a relatively versatile defender, a solid decision maker, like, just give me a plug and play solid big like that. That's so much better than what they have with Valanciunas. And then CJ and BI are just ultimately redundant. And the problem is neither of them are like real stars, not in the sense where we're talking about top 30 players, right? OKC had the three best players in this series by far. And when I think about the long-term outlook of New Orleans, there's no question that Herb Jones and Trey Murphy are just more valuable because it's really hard to find elite perimeter defenders who can also consistently knock down spot-up jumpers at a really high level, especially like Trey being just one of the most special pure shooters in the league. That's the vision, bro. That's when they play their best basketball. And I would probably trade BI, dude. I've gone back and forth on that. I think they have to move off of one because when all three of those guys were on the floor this year, they got outscored by 3 points per 100. That's really bad for your three best players. And ultimately, it just comes down to BI is going to get you more trade value because of his age. I do not think he is the long-term partner for Zion. I just don't think he's good enough. I think, yes, he has these stretches of special shot making, but the fact that he doesn't pressure the rim or shoot high volume threes ultimately just leads to this erratic nature as a scorer because it's so many tough shots and it limits his efficiency. And although I think he's a good and underrated playmaker, he's not good enough there. And your best defensive configurations aren't going to include him on the wings. It's going to be Herb and Trey out there. CJ's 32. CJ can't be the lead perimeter guy on a true contender to me, but it really depends on what you can get back for BI, I think, because at that point it's like, maybe that's how you get your real quality big because you don't really need more wings. You're pretty set on the wings. But when I just think about how the spacing would improve, having just like willing knockdown spot up shooters and dudes who bust their asses defensively alongside this ridiculous rim force that is Zion. And even though CJ's inconsistent and he was bad in this series, BI was worse. CJ was bad. He was like 17 a night on 48% true shooting or something. Having at least that dynamism as a volume pull up shooter from deep and what he does as a floor spacer, I think I slightly prefer. Both those guys are flawed, and that's ultimately what New Orleans is going to have to figure out. Zion is crazy. Like, Zion is at least fringe top 15 when healthy. And they have, like, two quote-unquote perimeter stars, but neither of those guys are good enough. They need somebody who can float that sort of offense as a legit number two. And then it's like, New Orleans would be a real contender. They're not that far away, but that is a tough thing to find. So I'm excited to see how they address this offseason, because if they move off Jonas and if they trade either BI or CJ ultimately and do get a high quality big, or even if they add more stud wings, whatever the exact path may be, I would be very optimistic about this team because the configuration right now is just clunky, but the talent is there.
What do you think about Trae Young?
Oh man, I would do that. I don't know exactly what that package looks like.
I mean, you're probably giving up.
Because I'm not giving up Trey Murphy.
No, you're probably giving up BI, and you're trying to see if they'll take Dyson Daniels with him and a bunch of picks. I don't know if that's too low for Trey. I don't know what Atlanta would want. But I'm thinking about ideal partners for Zion. I mean, he's a lead point guard. He'll stretch the floor out. And he seems to be available. Like, you know, I mean, there's a lot of rumors.
Yeah. Well, the good news is New Orleans has picks out the ass, bro, because of the Drew trade and because they still have at least this year's because of the AD trade. So like, and they've held on to all of their own, which is a rare thing. So Atlanta, I imagine they're looking for just an insane amount of picks if they move off of Trey, because what is the other direction to take? Like, he's young. Like, you have to just be going into a more full rebuild. You're not building around DeJounte Murray. At least I hope you're not. And they have picks to offer, and they could offer a Brandon Ingram to where, like, you're still competitive now. It's not a totally illogical option. I don't know. We'll see. But to me, having that sort of pick and roll creator, like having that sort of over the top shot maker, Trey doesn't have to be your best player. Zion can be your best player. They can trade off, and then you're going to defend like crazy on the wings, and you have really good spot up shooters. Like, that's a contender, Logan. And that to me is the direction they have to take. I think running it back with both CJ and BI would be a kind of a waste of a year. And Zion staying healthy is the ultimate key to unlocking all of that. But he's been so good when he is healthy. I would bet on it. I would go all in on it. I don't really see a better option that they have.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets. Yeah,
it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
All right, let's talk about this last game. Celtics Heat, unfortunately, really the thing most worth talking about from this is that Kristaps Porzingis gets injured. It's a non-contact injury. He comes up holding his leg. Now he's in a walking boot post-game. Sent out an optimistic tweet at the very least, but it doesn't look good overall. If they have to operate in a world without Kristaps Porzingis, Logan, how does that affect the outlook on this team?
I think it changes everything for the Boston Celtics. There were multiple plays in the first half, too, before he actually injured it and walked off the floor, too. There was a little thing where he rolled his ankle. He clearly was, you know, was already not at 100%. And then I'm not 100% sure what happened. You know, they kick it to him. It looks like he's about to explode with the ball and just can't. When he goes to plant, he just stops, has to give up the rock. And that's what I really didn't like is immediately there's a guy with a history of it. You know, he has an injury history, so he knows. Yeah. His experience with these things, immediately stopped, started moving gingerly, put his hand up, needed the sub, grimaced. And when he left the court, I didn't like the fact that Kristaps was putting his head in his jersey, man. I didn't like the body language. I didn't like any of it. And so I hope that they're okay. And I'm not ready to make any big declarations about Boston in terms of if they get to the finals or not. I think this is still one of the most talented teams in all of basketball. And even without Kristaps Porzingis, I think they're better than last year because they got Jrue Holiday. Like the defensive ceiling that this team can consistently reach, or not consistently, let me rephrase that. The defensive ceiling that hypothetically Boston can reach when they're engaged is very, very high. Consistently, they hold the Jimmy Butler and Terry Rozier-less Miami Heat to 84 points and 88 points in back-to-back games. And I'm not going to come out here and give them a big cake and a bouquet of roses and for that, because that's what you should do. But that is what Boston is capable of because they have that kind of personnel. And so I think they're better than last year with Holiday, with the level that Derek White's at. I think Jason Tatum is better. I think Jaylen Brown is marginally better. Like, I think Boston would still probably be my favorite to get out of the East without Kristaps Porzingis. But what I will say is it does two things. I don't think they're better than Denver. I would pick Denver right now with healthy Kristaps, so I would still take Denver without him, because I do think Porzingis is the X factor for this team. How reliable he has been as a floor spacer, like he's 7'3", can just shoot over everybody. He's an elite post scorer, again, mismatch attacker. can just go get what he wants at will when he gets a smaller guy on him. And he's been a dominant rim protector for the Boston Celtics. You can't understate Kristaps impact on the floor this season. But I will say all this is if Porzingis is out for an extended period of time, I think it opens the door up for the New York Knicks to potentially make a Eastern Conference Finals and Finals run. Well, no, they meet in the Eastern Conference Finals. So yeah. I think it opens a door for the Sixers or the Knicks to make a Finals run. And that's why I think it's important that either team capitalizes on this opportunity if Kristaps is out. Like Philadelphia, your back is against the wall. You are down 3-1. It is time to find that grit, find that energy, find that heart, because you don't know when these things are going to open, man. And Boston is so talented that they're going to be right back here next year, man. It is going to be just as hard to get through the Eastern Conference next season. Boston's not going anywhere. So you got to strike while the iron's hot, man. If you're Philadelphia, if you are New York, the time is now, man. You got to make that push. I like the Knicks more. I like the way they've been playing more. I believe in their recipe more. So the Knicks are the team that I'm really looking at, man, if Kristaps is going to be out, that it's your time to strike, man. It opens the door for a Knicks Finals run. I was not anticipating this. And to be clear, I would still take the Celtics. I still think they're the most talented team out of the bunch. But it was just a window. Just a little crack in the window, man. We're about this big. Now we got a door. Now we got a door if you're the Knicks, man, if Kristaps is going to be out.
I have viewed the Celtics as unbeatable in the East. I just think the talent advantage is too significant. And as well as the Knicks are playing, and even though I think Julius Randle can be a negative, I also think he unlocks a ceiling having him as a legit second star shot maker and just the physicality and the size that New York probably needed to knock off Boston, because they would need both him and Brunson playing at this unreal level. And I just think Brunson carrying that load against the Boston team this good, that's overwhelming. But I do think that there is now a vulnerability with Boston that there just wasn't. Now, they are still 21-4 without KP on the floor. They're plus 12 points per 100 possessions without him on the floor. Like, this team is just so good that they're still going to be a damn good basketball team with the absence of any of their five key starters. Tatum obviously would be the most significant, but even then, like, you would have great point of attack defense, really good spot up shooting, one big physical wing shot maker in Jaylen, and you would have KP. Like, they'd still be a good team. They wouldn't be the favorite in the East in that situation, but they should be able to survive. They're so damn good. But KP has been insanely valuable. I think has been the second most valuable Celtic over the course of this season. Had some underwhelming moments in this playoff run, like game 2 against Miami was awful, but to have a guy who provides such distinct value as an elite pure rim protector, as an elite shooting big, as the most effective mismatch attacker, the most effective post scorer in the league this season, like, the guy is a unicorn, and he has been playing like a unicorn this year. And so when you lose that, you're losing a lot. And specifically, I just get worried about the big depth here, because they need both him and Horford available. And so they can still get through the East without KP. And I would honestly still pick it. But then you get to Denver and you just have no chance. I just don't think you can physically match up whatsoever. And I don't even think KP is a good matchup for Jokic because of a few things. He's not a great pure post defender. He's a great great rim protector, but Jokic can bully him physically. He's not a great rebounder. Jokic can kill him on the glass. That's not a very easy matchup for him to hunt mismatches. Like, there are various reasons I don't think KP is at his best there, but if you take him out, like Al Horford being your lone big, who I actually believe in, like, we better not see any Luke Kornet minutes, bro, against the Denver Nuggets in the NBA Finals. So that's what would suck if he's not available. Hope he is okay. Of course, I love the guy. I've had so much fun watching him this year. If he isn't, Boston is still so talented and this East is so flawed, they would still be the pick to get out, but there's a much more legitimate chance that they lose. And ultimately, I don't think that team can win the title without Kristaps Porzingis. And that is the concern with KP. It always has been availability. And of course, he missed a decent number of games throughout this year, but he was mostly healthy. And to see it pop up in a moment like this, it just really, really sucks, because windows in the NBA don't last forever, man. You're the Milwaukee Bucks. You win in 2021. You think you're on top of the world. Chris Middleton gets hurt in 2022. Next thing you know, you're a first-round exit the subsequent 2 years. Boston is in a much better place because so many of their players are still at the peak of their powers and they have these guys under control through next year. Like, Boston should be every bit as good as they are next year. But to lose any opportunity due to injuries really, really would suck for them. The other thing to discuss from this game, Logan, is just the Derek White masterclass. I mean, some quick words on him getting 38 in this one.
Yeah, man. Yeah. What a great Derek White game. On the series, dude, what a great series. 22-3-4 and 55% from the field, 47% from deep, 72% true shooting. Derek White, too, a lot of these points were like Boston making a defensive play and then them just getting out in transition and White getting to the rim or hitting a transition three. Like, they dominated Miami. I know the final score doesn't make it look like they were killing them in the first half, and that's kind of when you could turn the game off and turn the lights out on Miami. Makes 8 of 15 threes. Like, Derek White is just – he's one of those perfect role players, man. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but, like, the fact that you can put him alongside superstars and he's going to make winning plays, winning decisions, play his ass off defensively, knock down a high percentage of his threes, and he's versatile. You know, some of these guys can get pigeonholed into roles. Like, White can handle a little bit. He can play make. He can make good decisions. He can get to the hoop. Like, Derek White's awesome, man. Shout out the boy. Shout out a dominant game where he was just best player on the court. It's how you can survive a Tatum and JB game like this, man. The boy, yeah. D. White. Great defensive effort, too, from everybody in this game in Boston, man. And Tatum said it. He had a quote, you know, everybody knows how talented we are. Can we be the tougher, harder playing team? That's what Boston's out here to prove, and they were tonight, man. I was impressed with White and the whole collective, but yeah, man, I definitely wasn't expecting this from the bald wonder himself. That's all it took, man. You shaved the head, and then you're closing in on 40 points, dude. That's the key. I think you should maybe do it. I think we could see you like ascend, man, your final Pokemon form.
No, I appreciate that, the kind words, but I already accidentally tried the buzz cut thing. Not really for me. And also, Logan, just frankly, we can't both have shaved heads. That's a really, really, really bad look. So I'm not going to do that one. But shout out to Derek White, dude. Buddy balled out. And that is what makes this Celtics seem so dangerous. It's the fact that any of these guys, the numbers, well, any starter other than Tatum, who, like, you expect to play at that consistent, somewhat superstar level, like any other member of the starting five can play at an all-star level on any given night, and none of them are ever that far off from it. And Derek White stepped up in this one, like, ridiculous spot up shooting, attacking in transition, consecutive cuts into dunks off of Drew Holiday post-ups. Like, come on, dude, that's awesome. That's like some 4-5 action from your one and your two. That fired me up. And he was running their offense down the stretch, which is just hilarious, but, like, he's a ridiculous weapon to have. And when neither Jalen or Jason play well and you go down KP, it's big to have that. This Heat team is so shorthanded. They're so lacking in talent compared, not just to Boston, but, like, everybody. Like, the fact that they got a game is both deserving of some props on their front and also, like, merits a good old-fashioned reaming of the Boston Celtics, which we delivered after game two. That was really bad. At least they haven't had another one of those. I still don't think they've played their best basketball in this series or really anything all that close to it, but we know what they're capable of with KP out there. And it looks like it's a calf strain for KP, which is not the end of the world. Like, that should be multiple weeks depending on the grade, but, like, theoretically, if you get to the finals, you would think he'll probably be back from that. Woj said that it doesn't look like there's damage to the Achilles, which is, of course, the fear when you see a guy pull up like that. So hopefully he's right. And hopefully we can get Boston in the finals, because whoever it is out of the West, I've presumed that it's going to be Denver. Minnesota's playing at an extremely high level. Like, there's so many great teams out West, but Boston is still a level above everybody else out East when they're right. And I would like to see them in the finals. That would just be, to me, best for the basketball product. Any final words on this amazing day of basketball before we get out of here, Logan?
Naz Reid.
RIP Darvin Ham. Probably don't think that he is going to last the night, and I don't have a problem with that one. But again, I will say, Lakers fans, you cannot expect to win the title every year, and you can't expect to beat the best player on the planet when also his supporting cast is better. So that's going to do it for us here today, guys. Hope you enjoyed. What a fun series that was. What a fun night of basketball that made this. If you want more Nerd Sesh content, we are going live after basically every night with these shows. So you can find those across our YouTube channel. You can listen to the shows across audio platforms. And we are also doing video essays in-depth video breakdowns on our YouTube channel, diving into some of these specific topics and player performances that we are seeing throughout these playoffs. If you want to follow us across social, see our trivia content, clips from the show, we are on TikTok at NerdSesh, Instagram at NerdSesh, Twitter at Nerd_Sesh. If you want our merch, like the flags behind us, the hats that we have, Logan's not wearing it today. He's out of uniform, but those are at thevolume.com. And if you want to join our Discord to talk with the fellas and to have a chance to speak to the one and only Matthew Spawnhour, the link to that is at the link tree across our social media bios. So with that, as always, appreciate you guys. I've been Carson Brabber.
I have been Logan Camden.
And this was Nerd Sesh.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.